LNB's audio diary for the 4th of March, 2024. It is today's a Monday, and it's about 10 of 8 in the morning, so 7:50-ish. And I'm heading into town to take care of the bunny. I'll get there probably about 10 after or so. Yesterday I had to mess around trying to get in. Oh my gosh, I just guzzled some cough tea, so I have the hiccups a little bit here. So yesterday I got there and there was somebody in there already. But they hadn't opened any of the gates. Now I know how to get in to the compound, but I don't have a key to get into the building. So if they haven't unlocked things, which is normal policy, they go around and unlock the doors that they would normally be needing to get around the building. The building is set up in such a way, sections of it are completely isolated from other sections. That is to say, they have locked doors between the different sections, and that's only to mitigate animals that get loose and start running around. So like the shelter is separate from the clinic, right? Even though they're an attached building, if you have the keys to get in, then you can get in. But you know, if a door to the clinic is open or unlocked but one to the shelter is not, you can't get in there because there's no direct pass-through, right? And other parts of the building are structured that way as well. And again, it's just to keep the animals isolated. So if one of them gets loose from a cage, they can only go so far. They can't just like make a bolt for, you know, the great outdoors or something like that. Even if a door is open somewhere, there should be a locked door between them and the outside world until you're bringing them outside. It's structured in a pretty sensible way, but the end result is that it's kind of a maze, right? When you first, you know, for me, it took me forever to figure out how the place was laid out. Not because it's especially complicated, it's just it doesn't follow what you would normally think is a logical pattern. And it's only once you start working there, either as a volunteer or, you know, certainly the employees, that you begin to see the logic of the layout. But the end result is that just because you can get into the compound doesn't mean you can get into the building. So I don't have a key. I don't want a key. There are one or two volunteers that are so long established that they've been given keys and they can get in. But most of them cannot, and I'm not going to make a point of it because I don't want a key. You know, they shouldn't have a ton of keys floating around, especially people that aren't actually working for the place, you know. So it's a good idea to keep everything isolated like that. But a side effect of that is that if I get there too early, which I did yesterday, then I could be locked out for a while until they see me. Now, again, I could have gotten into the compound, but because I didn't know if I could get into the building, I just sat there for a while waiting for some signs of activity. And sure enough, one of the employees there, she saw me in the car and she came out and opened the gate. She didn't know if I knew how to get into the gate, but most specifically, she unlocked the doors and I was able to get in. So that's a thing I try to avoid. Right, and it's only uncertain. It depends on the day. Some people get in earlier, or multiple people will get in at the same time, and then they all run around unlocking the doors that they need to unlock, and it, you know, becomes different. And maybe the outside gate is open, and if that's open, then odds are, you know, like the big roll gate that allows you to, you know, a car to pull in. If that's open, then it's pretty clear that all of the other system, you know, all the other doors that I would normally take advantage of are going to be unlocked, and I'll be able to get in. It's just a timing thing. Ultimately, it's just a timing thing. If I get there a little bit early, I'm going to be waiting, right? And that's what I did yesterday, and that's what all this is about. And I'll be getting there a little later than I did yesterday, and everything should be copacetic. So, anyway, Wow, that was a digression. Sorry about that. About locked doors, like you care. So let's see, what have I been up to? Well, I've been a bad boy regarding the book, but I don't want to say I've been a good boy regarding the role-playing game, because nobody cares about the role-playing game, you know, or few do. But I have been working on stuff for that, and, you know, and tangentially, I've been working on that stupid pizza game. I'm just going to call it the pizza game. And that's that board game that, I must have mentioned this, but the Tony's Pizza has a board game on the back of the pizza box. It's a frozen pizza. And and Tony's is a really cheap pizza. It's, you know, it's kind of, I won't say it's the worst. It's not, by any means, actually. It's not the worst frozen pizza I've ever had. But it's not high-end. You know, it's not a high-end pizza. But very cleverly, they have recently put a kind of a Candyland-style board game on the back of their pizza box. And I did a video about that a couple weeks back and put it up. And I had a lot of fun with that. And, you know, I got a little bit of feedback anyway, where people thought it was amusing to watch. So I worked on that, and I thought, well, you know, there's more that could be done with this game, right? Because Candyland is all well and good, but I'm a chutes and ladders guy, or snakes and ladders guy at heart when it comes to simple games like this. So I wanted something that would allow for that sort of backsliding, right? And that's the key to chutes and ladders. You can also move forward in chutes and ladders, but I think I'm going to make this a structured game. Now I've been experimenting with these. I've been buying more Tony's Pizza and experimenting with these boards, this board game, and structuring it in a way that would make it more fun to play. And you know, I know I've talked about this, so forgive me for my. My repetition here, but I've been working on it even more. And one of the things that I've done is I took photos of it, and that was a little complicated, because if I take a photo of it, it leaves a glare on the box. Because the box, here's the thing, the box on that must have a plastic coating on it, though it doesn't feel like plastic. It feels just like that slick paper coating that you'll see on a lot of food products, or any other kind of, you know, product out there. Basically, it feels very slick, but there's not actually a plastic coating on there. But there must be one on this Tony's Pizza box, because a lot of inks don't want to stick to this thing. You know, even like a Sharpie will bubble up on there, and it looks pretty crappy. So it's like, what is on this? But if you cut it or tear it or something like that, I don't notice a plastic coating on it. So there's some kind of finish that they put on this that is very resistant to probably moisture, right? Well, it makes sense. It's a food product, right? But other food products I've used as scrap cardboard it's nowhere near to this extent, right? So it's actually, despite how tacky everything looks, it's actually a high quality sort of cardboard for the purpose that it's designed. For my sake, it makes it a little hard to edit, right? Putting, you know, lines on it and arrows and all sorts of stuff like that. So I was challenged by that, you know, and it's a good thing that I've been experimenting with this if I want to have a finished product that looks the way I want it to look, right? And I want it to be nice. Right, not perfect. It's a card. You know, it's a game off the back of a pizza box. So, you know, it's never going to be great, but I want it to look pretty good, all things considered. So, one of the experiments that I did is they make these things they call paint pens, and there are many different kinds. There are many, many, many different kinds, but one of the kinds that they make, it's in the shape of a pen, but it actually has a brush at the end of it. And you're not putting on ink, you're putting on something, it's like halfway between paint and ink, right? Or maybe it's a very, very thick ink, I'm not sure. But it dries almost as quickly as ink. Not quite, but almost as quickly as ink. But it goes on very thick. And in the case of the ones that I have available to me locally, they're metallic colors. But they actually, if you search them out and you're willing to pay, you can get them in almost any color. But the ones they have locally are like metallic colors. And they might be a green or blue or red or whatever, but they have a metallic quality to them. Okay, well, that's actually all right. I was just experimenting anyway. But these do adhere very nicely to the cardboard, and they dry quickly. So that's what I'm going to be using to make my edits on the box, right? That's what I'll be using. Or will I? Because what I did yesterday, I did this yesterday, I took photos of the box, but as I say, a glare would appear on it because it's got that slick cover, so I had to take a couple of them, and then I stitched them together in Inkscape. It wasn't absolutely perfect, but it was more than good enough to get the idea across, right? I stitched them together in Inkscape, and then I put them on a decent background, and, you know, blah, blah, blah. I cut out everything I didn't want to show from the pizza box, like the ingredient list and all that stuff. And what I ended up with was a nice image of this game with, you know, the edited arrows and everything else that I put on there. And what that would allow me to do is either to print it out. I could print it out onto another surface if I wanted to, or I could use it digitally, right? So just as an experiment, I took that and I brought it into Owlbear Rodeo, which I use for the Star Drifter role-playing game. And boom, there it was. I just adjusted the size a little bit so that you can fit, you know, the tokens that are used in the role-playing game, which we actually haven't gotten to use since the player characters have very wisely avoided combat. But the tokens are there, and you can use it to play this board game, right? All right, well, that's just an experimental map. It's not one that I would actually play with, but when the whole thing is done, the beauty of this game is that it's a board game, right? And it's a very simplistic board game, so the rules would be easy to use. But there is more to it, actually much more to it, than there would be for just a back of the pizza box, Candyland sort of analog, right? In this case, there will be strategy that can be used. There are rules for when characters, if they end up landing on the same... One of the rules of this game is that only one token can occupy a space at a time, right? And what that means is that if you land on someone else's space while they're, you know, a space while someone else's token is there, you have to battle for that space, right? And that will, in the case of Star Drifter, that will mean moving to another board or another map and having a battle there, right? And using Star Drifter rules, right? Now, because the battles can be extremely deadly in this game, or sometimes take too long, for the sake of brevity, they'll, at least I'm experimenting with, they only go to first blood, right? So whoever gets the first hit, that's the winner. And then you go back to the pizza game, and whoever got hit moves back one space, right? But they keep the damage they accrued, right? And that can play into the game as it goes along. So if they get into a couple of fights and have taken enough damage, they may end up getting killed or getting down to zero or less, right? And if that's the case, they go back to the beginning. They're not out of the game, but they go back to the beginning of the game. And when they go back to the beginning, they're fully healed and they go, but they may be way, way, way behind. Play tests of the board game indicate to me anyway that if you get an early lead, that's very hard for other people to beat, right? Now, it's entirely possible for someone with an early lead to get bumped way back really fast, but it turns out that if you can keep an early lead, then you can generally get towards the end very quickly. But one of the rules of this version is that you need to get the exact number to hit the finish, right? So if you're two spaces away from the end, you need to roll a 2 on the die, right? If you don't roll a 2 on the die, you're not moving, right? I've also upped the die so that the game is a little faster paced, right? Normally you're going 1 to 4, and they have this kind of crappy system for determining how many dice or how many spaces you go, right? And it's using flipping coins and stuff, and that would be annoying and it wouldn't work very well. And when I first did the video, I rolled a D4 and did that. Well, that's all well and good if you're not really doing a combat system, right? That adds a complication and therefore slows things down. So I've bumped up the speed by using a D6, right? I've also got a lot of arrows pointing to different areas where if you land on this space, you end up going either back. And I only have one arrow that moves forward in this version, but I think the next version, there are not going to be any arrows that move you forward, right? The backslide is a continual danger for everybody. And the game, and it allows the game to last. I want a game that can last roughly about an hour per game, per play. And there'll probably be 4 players. It'll probably be for 4 players. The more players, the slower the game, obviously. But you can have as many as you want. There shouldn't be a problem with that. But the more characters, the more character tokens that are on the board, the more combat you're going to have, because the more people are going to be landing on other people's spaces. Combat will slow things down, right? But the combat is an interesting... it's going to be an interesting thing, because if I'm playing in person, which really means if I'm doing a solo play, but if I'm playing in person, I'll be using my Star Drifter Ultimate Dungeon Terrain, or SUDT, right? But if I'm playing digitally, that will be one of the game maps for Star Drifter, and the players will play there. Now you get some strategy involved. Not strategy, really it's tactics, because it's going to be on the fly stuff. So there'll be tactics involved. But I'm also considering, and I have to play test this, I'm also considering giving every player character, they'll get, how is that going to work this? They get one reroll, right? It would be, in Star Drifter terms, it's called a second chance roll. But the second chance roll can apply to, like, this one specifically applies to the pizza game, right? So while you're on that board, you can get one second chance roll on the 6-sided die, right? So if you roll and it's like you're going to get knocked back, you may as well use your second chance roll to see if you get a better, you land on a better space or something like that. To me, that's a pretty good idea. You get that and you get one landmine. A landmine allows you to drop a landmine behind you as you're leaving a space, so that anyone who lands on there gets blown up and knocked back one space, right? Nobody takes any damage to their character on the pizza board. Everything that happens on the pizza board is about moving you around the board someplace. But if you go to either the SUDT or a game map, now your character is taking damage. And that damage, if you get enough of it, is gonna knock you back on the pizza board, right? So you can have, I think, if you have 4 characters and everybody's familiar enough with the rules, and they're not complicated, I just explained them all, then I think a game could last about an hour, hour and a half. The slow part might be the combat, obviously, because you're using Star Drifter rules. But Star Drifter rules during combat will also allow you to use other skills, right? So you have a character who's in the middle of combat, who gets damaged, you can try to heal yourself if you've got the skill. And of course, even if you don't have the skill, because anybody can try to use any skill in the game that they want, right? At any time, it's just you have a much poorer chance of pulling off whatever you're trying to do if you're not trained in it. But anyway, that it's surprising how much, it's to me. I guess my whole underlying goal for this thing is to kind of illustrate that you can create your own entertainment, right? People don't have to hand it to you. You don't have to sit there like a zombie watching shows that, if they're good, then it's not a waste of your time. But how much garbage do we consume? throughout the course of a week or whatever. You know, garbage media. You don't need to have garbage media. You can create your own entertainment with the sparest of things, right? You know, with the silliest of inspirations, you can, you know, create what might turn out to be an interesting board game. Well, I don't know how much this doesn't have legs, right? It's just a Star Drifter goofy thing. But I think it could be entertaining and have, you know, people could have fun with it. So, anyway, I guess that's it for today because I am at the clinic.